episode 163 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded December 10th, 2017. Top 10 TV shows of 2017. Guys, it's our actual best of the year episode.
It is.
All right.
Before we get too deep into it, I want to say there are still technically 21 days in the year, and I know someone's going to be like, what about the great show that drops in the 22nd? It's not – we can't judge that one episode against all the other shows of the year.
I love that we were 2.5 seconds in, and you said, before we get too into it
– I want to start.
I feel like we even got a chance to even
– Top of the show. I know some people are fanatical about this. You don't do your end of year before the end of the year, but – let's be honest. Nothing's going to happen in December that's better than everything we're doing.
I like the idea that Netflix is just going to sneak out like 15 shows on like the Friday before.
They are. That is going
to
happen.
Like I mean, like a furniture warehouse. Like it's end of year liquidation. Netflix has to sell out. Everything must go.
End of year binge watching.
Yeah. Like they're going to get taxed on all the shows they still have on January 1st that aren't released.
You do not want to be taxed on that Adam Sandler crime drama they've got.
Yeah, so. Yeah, or whatever Ashton Kutcher comedy. got in development.
The Ranch.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was looking at all the shows I've watched this year. Randy, you and I have watched a lot, like completed seasons of a lot of shows.
Given that we both have children, it's not a good amount of TV. We've watched way too much TV.
It's deadbeat dad status?
It's deadbeat dad status. It's an irresponsible level of television.
So your wife said, watch the kids, and you watched all this stuff?
Yeah, well, there are kids on them. There are kids on TV.
But half of the shows that I watched were Netflix shows. Half of the ones that I completed, and part of that's due to their binge model, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's also they're just cranking out so many shows that are just right in my wheelhouse of what I'm interested in watching.
Netflix is king for now, yeah, for sure.
Well, you know what the irony behind it is Netflix offered us an option where everybody could watch whenever they want to, and it totally killed what we were doing before where it's like, you know, Monday night we talk about the Monday shows Tuesday morning. Well, now we're all just binging the Netflix stuff on the same weekend, so right. It's become like the new way to talk about shows.
It is the water cooler, whatever
whole
the show
season,
is, yeah.
Yeah, instead of the episode.
Well, I mean, we were talking a little bit before we started recording about how we all feel about top 10 lists. Les, you don't seem as much a fan of them.
I don't generally like top 10 lists. I mean, I like the movie High Fidelity as much as anybody else,
and
I loved all the top 5 lists in it, but. Unless you get really specific on topic and category, I have a real hard time head-to-head ranking anything. And when it comes to TV shows, I kept finding myself getting these like splinter fracture categories further and further down into minutia. Because like, how does Casual compare to Handmaid's Tale versus Voltron? Like, I have no good way to fairly rank these that don't start having like a bunch of like 5 deep slashes, like this slash this slash this slash this. That's rank number 4, and so it just gets. I was telling the guys before we started recording. I think what I'm going to do next year is just write down everything that I watch over the year, and then divide them into things that I was glad to, things that I had to, and stuff that I just didn't even sit all the way through, because I didn't track everything I watched this past year. And I'll admit it was mostly out of embarrassment. Like I know the volume of TV I watch, and I don't want to see it written down.
You know, I feel like we could do top 10, you know, political satire of 2017. You know, top 10 primetime comedies. There's so much to like really get down into the nitty gritty, but we're trying to pull together the best 10 shows of the year. And even our system that we came up with, which involves
science,
all of us creating rankings, and then the final ranking just being whoever, you know, what shows got ranked the most.
Yeah, like our top two are the shows that all 5 of us liked and put in our top 10s.
Yeah.
Or actually not even our top 10s, they just made our like top 20s.
Yeah, true.
So we just any show that all 5 of us watched that get our top 2 spots. So yeah, there's a little bit of mad science going on in putting that list together.
There's one show in here that I have not watched. Well, I don't think any of.
Well, I am.
Sorry, just repeat that.
There's one show in here I don't think I've watched any of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny how that works, but It's hard to kind of come up with a system that is consensus-based when all of us were bouncing around. And there's so many shows that came out last year. There's like over 150 new shows.
Oh, for sure.
Mostly we can cut out network crap that we're not really interested in. That doesn't that's not our
Yeah, it was jam. Easy to not follow Blue Bloods.
Yeah, right. No problem there. But for us to all kind of put down, these were the ones that we were all loving the most. And then we all had a little extra list honorable mentions thing, and Randy did some number system to even give weight factor to all of those, and you came up with something that I'm like, oh, it's interesting that that's our number one, because individually not necessarily
but it sort of all of us ranked it high enough that it makes sense. We'll get to that. I am obsessive about making lists. I write myself a list of all the comics I read each month, all the TV shows I watch, the restaurants I go to, because at the end of the year, I love making a list of how was my year? What did I like? What did I go all the same time? What did I watch that I loved that month? And so making this kind of list, the way I rank them is if I had to cut things out of my schedule, what would I cut first and what would I cut last? And that is sort of how I rank everything against each other. And that's the system I use. So basically, however much I love this one show, if I had to lose it in order to watch these other nine, then it ranks number 10.
I use a different system than that. So for me, it's I can tell you what show's a good show or what show's a bad show. So I have to go beyond that in order to get an accurate ranking. So what I usually put into account is how much are me and my friends talking about it? Is this something that just I watch, or is my family watching it? Are my friends watching it? How much are people engaging with this content? And I rank those shows higher.
The shows that just I watch are way, way better than the shows that everybody watches.
I agree with Les.
I just always feel like it gets real subjective with me when I try to I went about my list kind of the way Randy did, trying to think about it, what would I cut out of my schedule. But given the news cycle of the week or where we are in the trash fire of a year, I kept finding myself man, I know I watched Handmaid's Tale, but would I drop that out of my schedule versus Rick and Morty or something? Yeah, because I really just need the stupid brainless. But that doesn't make it better television necessarily.
Something that you need.
but I would find myself basically that means that there's 10 shows that I could not watch during this year. But that I love, but I could probably think of 10 dramas that I'm not doing that right now.
Yeah.
Well, that is all to say that we very much recognize this is a subjective system. But nevertheless, we have a TV Dudes top 10 list that we're going to be going out over this year, this episode. And before we get into all of that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Les.
And we want to give you guys a little bit of a reminder. If you like what you're hearing, you want to help us out, go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. That helps us out. You can also go to patreon.com/TV Dudes, make a per episode pledge, give us a buck or two. We're not asking for much, but the thing is, when a whole community of you guys all donate, really helps us out, and we really appreciate the support from all of you guys over there. patreon.com/TV Dudes.
By the way, this time of year, people are making resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
Your New Year's resolution could be to write an iTunes review. That's a good resolution.
Or make a per episode pledge.
Yeah. That's also great.
Yeah.
You want to you're going to go to the gym, get in shape. This is the year for that. And become a patron of the TV Dudes.
If you listen to us regularly, if you find that there's value in this, why not?
For the cost of a cup of coffee a day, you could support radio.
A cup of coffee 20 years ago.
We also want to say that we are proud members of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record Network.
And this month we've been promoting a podcast called The Good Die Young. Is that what it's called?
Oh, I've heard of this. I've heard of this.
Les, give us a lowdown.
So this is my side project podcast. I have a love for doomed shows that, the ones you get through the pilot and are like, oh, I'm going to text all my friends because, shit, there's no way this is getting a second season. Those shows, and the first one I'm doing is about The Middleman, ABC Family 2008 show. And so I've been deep diving through it with interviews and episodes that just crawl through the plot. I've had Grant on an episode. Randy's coming up on one. I think we're on episode 5, drops tomorrow.
Yes, as we record this, yes.
the gooddieyoungtv.com. Go check it out. Go to iTunes, do the subscribing and all of that, guys.
Yeah, those 5-star reviews work there too.
Yeah.
Do it.
All right, guys, we are going to just go ahead and jump into our list. How we're going to do this is we're going to start at the bottom, start at number 10, and work our way to number 6 before we take a break.
What about our honorable mentions? Do we want to save those for the end or do those first?
I think we should save those for the end because once we kind of run through our list, then it kind of moves to us saying, oh, but what else was left
over? Yeah. That is, right? Once we get to the top 10 and everyone's yelling up there at their podcast listening system of choice about how could you leave off this show, we will come back and reveal the, like 12 or 13 shows that almost made it.
And none of those shows will be the show you're still wanting to
That's
hear.
True. That Blue Bloods is not on the list. I'm going to spoil that right now.
We did not like Blue Bloods
this
season.
It's not. Yeah.
It wasn't a good season.
No, this was a bad season. Not as good as last season.
The Good Fight was awesome, though. And I think I'm joking, but I'm not.
No, we have that on your list of honorable mentions. Spoiler. all right. Number 10, guys, goes to Better Call Saul Season 3 over on AMC.
So, Les, you've not seen?
I'm so far behind. I'm a full season behind on Better Call Saul.
Okay. Mm. So this was definitely on my list. It ranks highly on my list, as do all of Vince Gilligan's projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this year was a particularly good year because it really heated up the Chuck and Saul thing and sort of resolved it in a way.
The tension between those two was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I still maintain that Michael McKean should have been actually nominated for an Emmy. I feel like I think they submitted for him to be an Emmy, but yeah. I don't think he was even in the ranking.
Right. Fuck the Emmys.
Yeah. Should have won it because his performance in the courtroom scene in particular.
Yeah.
But throughout the whole season was phenomenal.
Well, and there's also the whole storyline with Michael Mondo and Gus Fring, and that stuff going on.
Yeah, they could have called that the Michael Show, and it would have totally worked too.
Yeah, so there's
Better Call Mike.
Better Call Mike. There's a whole thing going on with that side of it. And we're seeing backstory on the cartel and all that. And yeah, this was a great season of a great show.
I still think it's funny that Breaking Bad was king shit.
Yeah,
right? It was the top dog of TV for quite a while, and like all of us in this room, we love that show. I think all of us. And you think of that, this one's just following in the same footsteps. It's a different character, but it's all the same creators. It's the same type of storytelling.
Yeah.
But take away that criminal element, like initial drive, and make it a little bit more lighthearted with Jimmy McGill, and I guess have the soft side with the lawyer aspect. And
yeah.
It doesn't seem to have that same weight that makes this must watch for everyone.
Well, what I think it does, though, is where that weight kind of kept you grounded in Breaking Bad. I feel like there was always a sense like this isn't going to end good. Like this has a stopping point and it's going to end bad for these characters. With Better Call Saul, even though we know how it's going to end, I do feel like this could be more sustainable as a show. Like you could just keep going with this.
In fact, there is more of a glimmer of hope because they show the present timeline.
Yeah.
And we don't know. I mean, we only get like 20 seconds. Like,
that
every
is year, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that might be like we might get to season 6 and then we jump ahead of Breaking Bad and then we're there.
Do you guys think that, like I do, that Saul's going to develop superpowers and the whole there's going to be a new series after that where Saul is a superpowered former Cinnabon manager?
Not a chance.
Just me. Okay, fair enough. Fair.
Only. Well, I mean, if the ratings start to do bad and AMC ends up like losing it to the CW or Freeform,
right? Yeah.
And I could see them making that kind of tweak.
Well, how are they going to do the Walking Dead crossover? Is it going to end where the Walking Dead like the apocalypse happens and Saul becomes like he has his own little tribe?
They're already in the shared universe because there was some Walking Dead or Breaking Bad reference within the Walking Dead.
Yeah. So I'm just saying. This show could go on for a long time.
Well, I mean, before the zombie apocalypse when Saul represents Negan.
Yeah. Anyway, that's when I'll stop watching Better Call Saul.
All right, guys, let's move on to our number 9, which is The Handmaid's Tale over on Hulu. First season, Elizabeth Moss. I think this caught most of us by surprise.
Wow. I mean, Hulu nailed it here, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't say by like this was a great book. Hulu has been quietly sneaking up on like every time anybody I know brings up Hulu's original programming, it's always like the way we used to discuss like Skinamax. Like, like, oh, they made an original movie? That's adorable.
Yeah, right.
And yet almost everything I've seen on Hulu has been more and more surprising of like – okay, the production quality is great, but this show doesn't quite hit my wheelhouse. Okay, the production quality is great on this one too, and it doesn't quite. And I kind of knew eventually they would hit on something that was must-watch TV for me. And Handmaid's Tale was the first show that they had that fully justified their "fuck you, we're not going to binge watch.
Yeah,
we're going to dole it out." Because I like The Path, and I like Shut Eye, and I like some of their other
Chance
and some of their other series, but this was both a book that was great. I like Margaret Atwood. This series is spectacular. It's really timely.
Yeah.
Like, I found myself, if anything, I didn't want to put this one on my lists, not because it wasn't spectacularly great and didn't have to be there, but because it was almost viscerally not enjoyable to watch from week to week. I've never yelled at my TV this much in years of, like, set the building on fire, fucking kill everybody in that building.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll make it out, but you should, you all you ladies should burn all of it down. Do it.
See, and I think that's
every episode.
That's a testament to how good it is that it made it so far on the list, because it is a harrowing watch.
All the water cooler talk I had with people about this was like, so we're in agreement that, like, if the edict comes down and they come to your work one day and, like, make all the women boxers shit, you burn that building down on the way out, right? Like, that was the entire water cooler conversation for me about this show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bleak, but it's so important to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And man, of all the shows that we've listed here, this was by far the most beautiful shot.
Oh, yeah, that overlooks. I feel like that overshadows or pushes aside how well made the show is. Beautiful.
The performances are all first class, and I mean, the only reason this ranked on my personal list at 5, and which is I think pretty high, but it didn't rank higher only in the fact that, like, it was still a little bit unsettling to watch.
It's number 4 on my personal list too. It's way up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, are you guys ready to move on?
Let's move on.
Let's do it.
I'm excited about this next one because this was not on my top 10, but I wanted to talk about it. Number 8 goes to Legion, first season over on FX.
Hell yeah.
Speaking of beautiful shows.
Oh my gosh, this thing was amazing. That's my boy though. Dan Stevens. Like, see, I got that right. Not Smith, right?
Yeah, yeah, Dan Stevens.
I was calling him Dan Smith for the longest time.
He's the Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. He's also in this film called The Guest. Have you guys seen The Guest?
No, but I know what you're talking about. He's...
Holy shit. Like,
if creepy...
If you can find this movie, it starts... I won't... It starts one way and it ends a completely different way. But
kind of like Legion.
Kind of like Legion. And you see him in some of that stuff, and you're like, oh my gosh, if he got something to really bite
his
teeth
into. I got to say, I was not ready for the Shi'ar to come down and, like, take him at the end of, of The Guest. That was fucked up.
But no, this is his moment, right? Well, I mean, Beauty and the Beast was his moment, but this is his moment for us.
Yeah, well, he was great, but let's talk about Aubrey Plaza. Fantastic in this.
Okay, she's in everything all the time.
And, like, she's always great.
And yeah, but her project choices are spectacular.
Yeah.
She's often kind of the same character. She's like the female Michael Cera in a way.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, yeah.
But here I thought that she, like, because she usually just kind of plays the disdainful, somewhat maybe aloof, like, kind of hipster chick.
Mm-hmm.
But here she plays actual evil, and I'm like, okay, this is a good
villain.
This is a good deviation here, and this is fascinating.
Way more actual menace than just side eye.
Yeah, she gets to, like, really chew it up, and yeah, it blew me away. And also, this is a new outing from Noah Hawley, who's already done a fantastic job with Fargo every single season, but just showing how he can also, like, do the superhero genre and keep it just mind-bending. Like, the editing on this show is some of the best editing I've seen on television.
Yeah. Well,
and even though The Gifted is pulling more characters to, you know, that I name drop recognize and stuff from the comic than Legion did, Legion, for anybody that read X-Men comics, Legion is the most X-Men thing I've ever seen on screen, movie or television show. Either one. Like, it's like watching the X-Men comics from the 90s. It's in terms of, like, really getting the spirit of those comics and really feeling like an X-Men story.
But at the same time, it brings in this weird, like, Wes Anderson sensibility and this quirky weirdness, which belongs in the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that is what – it was sort of like art house TV meets sort of, you know, approachable superhero stuff. And they did the genre conventions perfectly. There were some fun action sequences. There was some amazing character arcs. But it also had this look and feel of – nothing else on TV is like this.
You bring it up. One of the things that, you know, we talk about all this good stuff, the costume design. How often do you look at a show and just go, these are amazing costumes every episode, whether it's the mental asylum uniforms.
Did we ever find out what actual era this is? Because it
feels like the 60s, but I don't think it is. I think it's modern.
Well, it feels 60s, but it feels 80s sometimes.
And we're never entirely sure when he's jumping around. He's different people.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like there's so much conflict as to which parts of these narratives are real and what is happening when and what's in his head.
And the thing is, that could be really frustrating if in the wrong hands, but Holly just masterfully plays it. Like, there's never a point where I was like, oh, I don't even know what's going on. I always knew what was going on or knew that he had a plan.
And Legion's entirely on Hulu now. Like, everybody should go binge watch Legion.
I can't wait for season two. I'm really curious where they're going to go from here.
Yeah.
But if this had been one season, just a perfect season, it still would have ranked high on my list.
I got to say this, since we're talking about it, I didn't like how they ended it. How we kind of got like an ending and then they were like, oh no, we're going to, you know.
It was a little weird, like given the big spectacle of everything else, to kind of go in that kind of odd cliffhanger.
Well, it's like we got our stinger where we see what happens to the Shadow King at the end.
Yeah.
But then they like hit us with a second stinger.
Yeah, they send two stingers out in opposite directions.
Yeah.
Well, the second stinger was for the hardcore comic fans.
Yeah,
don't
I was
you think
about
less?
To say.
Because that is either the Shi'ar or Arcade.
Yes, one of those two things.
It's probably one of those two things. And even if it's not, the thought that it might be is like, as a comics fan, I would just like stood up and cheered at that. That was so cool.
That is an Easter egg omelet for me.
Do you guys think
awesome.
we're gonna show up to us episode one, season two, and it's going to be resolved? Or do you think that's going to carry him away and we're going to see these teams detach this next season?
That's what I think.
I'm figuring that they're going to take the thing I really, really, really want to see and not address it for like three or four episodes.
That's how they do it always.
That is a Prestige TV thing. Yeah, we won't even see David Haller for three episodes. That seems possible.
Man, just talking about this really makes me regret putting Young Sheldon instead of this on my list.
I thought that was a weird call, but you do love Young Sheldon.
It's such a good show.
So much better than
Old
Sheldon.
He's like Old Sheldon, but younger. Like, it's like a little kid saying those witty lines.
It's edgier. It is edgier.
Okay, let's move on to our number seven. Last Week Tonight, which is like season four, I want to say, or five.
I don't even remember.
HBO. I mean, you guys all had a larger rallying call around this.
Wasn't on my list.
I did.
Oh, really?
Wasn't on my list.
It was definitely on my list. At first I missed it because, again, this falls into that like political satire category where I feel like I could spit off a top 10 list right now. But no, he's doing it the best. And I don't know if that's his format or if that's just his type of comedy, but you leave his program, I feel like, with more laughs and then also like knowing more and having better like conversation stuff than a lot of the other programs.
The fact that he goes so in depth into something, like, there's a problem with how we learn via the news nowadays. It's all sensationalist headlines and then two sentences and a little bit of misdirect on almost all of the information we get. And we are all so scatterbrained that we're like not really like accustomed to sitting down and focusing on just one subject and having it really like spoon fed to us. Like, here's the actual issue. We're going to really take you and hold your hand throughout all of this. And John Oliver does it every single week. And it's just a masterclass in like, hey, here's the problem. Here's calls to action, and you guys can actually do something about this. And it proves like he's effective in all these little calls to action.
I feel like him and the writers have mastered the formula of like the second we're going to get bored doing something ridiculous, because it's like heavy information. Look, it's a cute animal. Like,
and he has his sticks. They know how to pace it. There's no one else doing this. Like, we're a doomed group of idiots who can't figure out how to light our own torches, and this shitfire of a year is proved it. John Oliver is literally the only, like, lone person with a radio somewhere up in the mountains broadcasting to this trash fire. Like, there's no one on the news that anybody trusts. There's no one that's going into depth on anything that isn't like a complete clusterfuck
of
misdirection.
What about the Catheter Cowboy? He seems to be making a lot of
that
sense.
That guy speaks truth to power.
But again, like John Oliver's paying that dude.
I would also call out Samantha Bee.
Well, like the Samantha Bee does a great job, but like the Daily Show, and this isn't saying that the Daily Show is or isn't funny.
Yeah.
The Daily Show isn't doing what John Oliver does.
It's lost its edge to some extent.
Well, and they just aren't setting out to do. Like Oliver can sit down with net neutrality and explain that in a way that actually makes people call to action on it.
Samantha Bee doesn't do that too.
That's true.
There's no one. He's doing what other news. There's no one else. He's the only person standing up and doing like getting this done at all. Like if John Oliver falls down, we have no information worth a fuck spreading in this country anymore.
That's what I think is interesting. Is he's doing information and deep dive investigative journalism, but at the same time he's delivering it in a way that is funny and entertaining. Like there's never a point at which I felt like I did homework.
He goes into subjects I don't care about.
Yeah. And by the way, there were 29 episodes this year, which is pretty solid. That's not bad. And he covered everything from like cannabis and gerrymandering and the French election to, of course, tons of stuff on Donald Trump, to the Equifax security breach. Like, he goes into various things, corporate consolidation, forensic evidence. Like, some weeks it's very timely and topical. Some weeks it is a thing that you didn't think about, but it's really important and feeds into everything
civil
else.
Civil forfeitures.
Yeah.
Forfeitures.
The forensic evidence one is terrifying. Civil forfeitures. Yeah.
I've seen that, like, now crop up as something that's finally being addressed more and more in the news.
Yeah.
And it's got to be credit to what he did. Right? Yeah. He's at least in part.
He's our Edward R. Murrow. I mean, like, he's the only newscaster against the House Un-American Committee. Like that's the level of newscaster John Oliver's at, whether he's a comedian or not.
Yeah.
And there's no one else doing this.
I'm going to predict a story that he's going to do next year. Like totally tell the future time.
Okay.
The right now, like people are buying up freshwater and renting it to fishermen. So like now they're turning like water into real estate, lakes and like bits of ocean.
That's gross.
And this is becoming a big problem because, you have to pay taxes on fish even if you don't sell those fish, or you have to like rent the land. Just calling it now.
Okay.
He's talking about it next year.
But the reason this didn't
bang my head against something. No.
This did not make my top list this year, and it usually does, is because it was so hard to watch. This was harder than Handmaid's Tale for me to watch because every week it was like, oh, God, the world sucks.
And delivers it in such an accessible way.
It's always
way.
Funny, and I always enjoy it, but this year it just felt more oppressive, and I didn't enjoy it as much.
Sadly, I do think all his stories next year are going to just be the stories this year again, because we're terrible and we don't learn.
Here's a follow-up. Now, Randy, you said something that I found interesting, which was you felt that The Daily Show's lost its edge.
Yeah.
And what I think is, I think The Daily Show is still performing on the same level it's always performed on, but because of people like John Oliver, the bar's moved. And that same level of comedy that worked 10 years ago, it doesn't work anymore. Like, the information needs to be
there. It hasn't evolved. I agree there.
Yeah, I think that's true. The bar has moved. I do think The Daily Show lost a step without John Stewart. I think Trevor Noah doesn't have the same fire that I want from Samantha Bee or John Oliver.
He doesn't have the reputation that built up.
That's a big
one. He's working hard, and it seems to be getting better and better. Like,
yeah.
But it's just not there yet, and these other people hit the ground running because they already had
Trevor Noah is really funny, I think he's a good presenter,
yeah.
But he's not the father figure that I feel like John Stewart was to the team and everybody
came
out of there.
I think Trevor Noah is trying to do the same thing that John Stewart did, and that's not the speed that Trevor Noah should be running at.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what it is.
That's
Trevor
perfect,
Noah
yeah.
should be the young guy talking to the people who are not listening to John Oliver and Samantha Bee.
To the youth.
And instead, he's doing the same thing, and it's not quite working.
Well, hopefully this Brit can save us Americans. all right, let's move on to our number six. Which is Master of None Season 2 over on Netflix.
This was my favorite comedy of the year by far.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I love Master of None. I thought it was a fantastic
that
season.
That Thanksgiving episode,
yes.
What?
The Thanksgiving episode's amazing. The stories of New York where he's barely in it. I thought
was the season two.
I thought the first season was fun, but I think they elevated it and made it into sort of, it was like Louis C.K. without anybody pulling his penis out and masturbating in front of any comedians.
Also,
as far as I know,
tackled like a hard hitting celebrities, sexual assault type story.
Yep.
Like way before kind of everything reached this tipping point.
And his character actually does distance himself. Unlike Aziz Ansari, he just stays silent about Louis C.K.
Yeah. I thought this was a fantastic next season of TV. They brought in sort of the European sensibility, like they had the whole thing in the where he's like chasing down his bike and was it Paris or Italy? In the open, it was Italy, right?
Oh, yeah. It was cell phone, right? No, somebody took his
cell
phone.
Yeah, he's chasing his cell phone down. Like little bits of like French cinema made its way in, and he like every episode was like a little bit different. It was like a little mini contained movie, and it was all really funny, but it also had something to say. Yeah, this was fantastic TV.
I always think like it's beautiful, and it's all these little vignettes, and there is this through line through it. But for me, as much as I enjoyed that, I couldn't bring myself to put it in my top 10 just because I think I need that ongoing story arc now so much more in all
really?
My shows.
Interesting.
Like, I can't think of watching a show now that it's just episodic. Like, those don't have any appeal to me. I need long-form storytelling.
Interesting. I want some stuff that's disconnected from time to time.
Yeah, some Cheers or whatever. Like, I mean, I like Rick and Morty when it'll do like a little one-off, I guess.
But Rick and Morty's pretty serialized.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think looking at this list, Master of None is the only – yeah, it's the only non-serialized show on our top 10.
Aside from Last Week Tonight, which kind of is in a different category.
Yeah, it did have a through line. Like, it had the whole story with him and Bobby Cannavale and that kind of thing. But they would drop it from episode to episode.
Yeah.
It was like mini arcs.
And him and his
The
girlfriend.
French, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Italian lady.
The French, Italian lady, which I also loved that story.
The French spaghetti.
Yeah, I think that I'm okay with these sort of a little bit more episodic, especially with my comedies.
Well, I'm not.
Oh. Well, then maybe we should talk about a comedy that is not episodic.
Well, maybe we can talk about it after we go fight in the parking lot after this break.
All right, let's do it.
Nerd fight.
Or we could just drop the storyline.
Next scene. Randy, Grant, Kyle, and Les find themselves seated at the recording studio table.
No mention is made of any previous episodes.
Standalone begins.
Grant nurses a black eye. Number 5 goes to The Good Place over on NBC. This is their second season.
See, that's the transition I was trying to make. And then you mess it up with our whole break thing that we had to take.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Just because you guys had to pee.
I'm not Mike sure if this is working out. Like,
oh. You thought it would work.
Yes, Kyle. No. You win the coveted get the fuck out of the studio award.
Because The Good Place is a super serialized, like every episode is called a chapter.
Yeah.
Like it is a super serialized story of, and so if we're going by year. Then the last 4 episodes of last year are in this year. So Chidi's Choice, What's My Motivation, the introduction of Minnie St. Clair, and that big twist. Mm-hmm. That's all this year's
That's
Good
all
Place.
Technically this year.
Yeah.
And then we are
halfway through this season.
And then you get to this season where everyone had to be nervous. We were all nervous about how are they going to follow up that twist.
So shocked every episode last season that they kept not dropping the ball and going further and going further and getting better and better. And then this season just kept going. Like at this point, like it's a game of like, it's like watching a kid blow a big bubble with gum and like, oh, this is going to pop. I cannot wait.
It's made by people who are like, it feels like it's made by people who are like, we get canceled any minute. Don't save anything. Everything goes in.
Save nothing for the swim back.
The episode where they went through every single iteration over and over, like just the different versions of all the people. And yep. I don't want to spoil for anyone who hasn't watched this.
Jason figured it out. Jason.
That whole episode was so stunningly brilliant. And I was just like, wow, this is their second season and this is their second episode. And the ambition that it takes to do such an episode. I mean, they are hilarious.
This is a show at the top of its game, and it's in its second season.
Yeah. Where they've gone with Janet is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, every character on there has, like, there's a no dropped ball on any of the characters. Everybody's just gotten better and better and better.
And this is, I mean, Mike Schur is one of the people behind this show. And he's also the guy who did Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Rec. And both Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Rec are shows that are sitcom gold. Like, they do what they do very well. But this adds this surreal element of the setting and has an ambition to it that is beyond those shows.
It has a, like, mythology that you're like we're all trying to figure out a larger puzzle and that wasn't the case in the other shows.
That alone would carry it, but it also happens to have a cast that is putting in top-notch performances, whether you're talking about Kristen Bell or Ted Danson or any of the other people who are less well-known. Like, everybody's a great character. Everybody's delivering great stuff, and it's hilariously funny every episode. Like, I laugh out loud at every episode of the show.
Yeah, this feels like something special on television. Like, I mean, there's been a lot of really great cartoons, but Rick and Morty feels like something special on television. I feel like there's a lot of great sitcoms. Good Place is I'm amazed it had a season two. Like, Good Place feels like some kind of magical, how is this still going on TV? Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, like, they're leaving nothing. This is, we could be canceled at any moment. Just do it. Do it all.
They've already got a season three, so I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, that's amazing.
The fact that NBC sees the value in this show and that Mike Schur can take all these different characters and he and his team know how to piece them all together so perfectly. And, like, you watch where they kind of started with Parks and Rec, and it was sloppy. And all those characters had to figure out what they needed to be, and that's more a testament to the writers that they didn't know who they needed to be yet for the proper dynamic. Right. But then you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and they just got it right out of the bat.
Yeah.
And then you watch this show, and of course they got it.
Yeah.
And not only do they have that, but they have, like we already mentioned, the larger, like, ramifications of, like, here's where this whole arc is going to go, and it's going to get crazier and crazier.
Yeah. Also worth noting, this is the only network show on our top 10. No, I mean, you can make an argument for one of them being a network. This is the only network show, and it's far below everything else the networks are doing.
I would say that even 5 years ago, this show wouldn't have gotten a season two.
I agree.
Because I feel like this show only continues to exist by the fact that the network started to look at the next day viewings on streaming.
Yeah.
They started looking at the week after viewings on streaming because I don't think Good Place would have made it even a few years ago when the only ratings that mattered were that night.
I agree.
Not like, you know, when not even DVR mattered.
A few years ago, this show would be on thegooddieyoungtv.com.
Yes.
But think about the buzz that this show's garnered in its second season. Like, the first season, most people weren't watching it. It kind of flew under the radar with even how they released the whole season. And then everyone found out because it was on Netflix and everyone else who checked it out was recommending it like gangbusters.
Yeah, it's all proselytizing friends that got people to watch this.
I've introduced at least four people to this show, and every one of them has loved it.
Mm-hmm. Everyone.
Well, that's kind of become the new normal for shows like this, is instead of getting canceled at the end of your first season, they wait to see what the Netflix binge looks like.
Right.
Which I don't think this one, they was ever a doubt in anyone's mind that it wasn't coming back for a second season.
Right.
But Terriers would have had a second season nowadays.
God damn it.
Yeah, they could have got Terriers is good on the binge too. Like,
it is.
I never had it like week to week, but I feel like on the binge.
Mm. Oh yeah. Number four, guys. This is kind of surprising, but Game of Thrones, season 7, I think, right? Over on HBO.
Les, I know how much you love Game of Thrones.
I do, but I'm way behind. I've seen the first 4 episodes.
Yeah, not the first 4 seasons.
Episodes.
First 4 episodes.
So is season 7 good?
I mean, I feel like you guys might have liked it a little bit more. For me, season 7 was the mark of George R. R. Martin's vision no longer being necessarily fully adhered to as the previous seasons had been. And I thought it showed in a little bit looser storytelling, a little bit more contrivances, and a little bit more like silliness and lightheartedness that would not have been taking place under George R. R. Martin's watch.
Let me ask a question to the table. Pose the question. Is it better water cooler talk to come to work the next day and go, oh, I can't believe they killed our favorite character last night and this guy's a bad guy now? Or is it better water cooler talk to go, they finally brought that dragon in and he's burning down that shit? Like, because that's what we get with this show. We either get something really awful happens and everybody's talking about it, or something good finally happens and everybody's talking about it. And I can't figure out what makes for better Game of Thrones, the drama or the victory.
I appreciated the meticulousness of it, the slow pacing, the wide scope. There is time paid, and that was respectable, I thought. And as soon as it deviated from that source material, suddenly all these characters are crisscrossing in the most absurd ways. And
Westerosi Express.
The plot's just moving along and like, oh, victory here, victory here, and everything's great. And like, I'm like, what is going on?
Suddenly it's a risk that time investment's not going to pay off at the same.
See,
it's still fun to watch. I still love so much of it. And I still put this at my number six of all the shows, but it's usually in the top three for me.
It was in my top three, just barely. It's my third. But the reason for, and I have a different take on this, because I felt like George R. R. Martin was hampering things more than anything else. I thought the need to go into all this detail, some of which felt extraneous.
Oh yeah, the Dorne stuff's dropped.
I felt like they dished a lot of the fat, and because there were only seven episodes, I don't disagree that there was some, wait a minute, how'd that guy get there? He was on the other side of the continent. Mm-hmm. And you have to be okay with that. And I am okay with it because I'm not thinking of it at the time. I think of it later when I read people's recaps, but it doesn't jump out at me. What I'm thinking is we're seeing chickens come home to roost. We're seeing characters come together and plots come together that we've been waiting for seven seasons to see.
Yeah, it's like stacking up the dominoes, and now we finally get to push
knock
that
them over.
One.
This is fan service the season.
Yeah, it is. And that, you're not wrong. And I like being serviced.
Yeah. I'll take another.
I mean, just not as much. Not as much for me.
You don't enjoy being serviced as much as I do.
So wait, where did this
end up? I never thought of this
on
as the happy ending show, but
where did it end up on your guys' lists?
It's number three on mine.
Number three on yours.
Six.
Number six on it was actually number nine on mine, so I like this the least.
No, I don't watch the show.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Les liked it the least.
Yeah.
Well, all right, should we move on?
Move on.
Let's do it.
Number three goes to Rick and Morty, which was season three over on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim.
Rick and Morty, by the way, is largely here because of Kyle and Grant putting it so high on their list.
This is one of those shows that I know when I get to sit and watch all the episodes from this season, it will suddenly jump to the top of my list. Yeah. But I couldn't fairly put it there because I would be running on assumption. I did not get to watch very much of Rick and Morty this season. If you're behind a paywall, I'm sorry, there's too much fucking TV out there.
This is the one paywall.
Only the first four.
Only on adultswim.com, which barfs about half the time. Let me rephrase that. If you're behind a paywall, or if I have to try to fight the browser three or four times, there's a million other TV shows and I'll wait a year.
And he's being literal. There are actually literally a million other TV shows.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
Netflix.
I mean,
Netflix made 750,000 of them.
It almost any effort to watch your show, I will just move to one of the other. There's a list always of great prestige television.
I think you just need to whip that wallet out and drop some coin, I do. I got that season pass I bought for this thing every year. This is that one for me where one, it's a total pain in the ass to try to watch if you don't have cable. But I just like it too much. I want to get them every Sunday.
Or just hit me up, I'll. I'll give you access.
Doing that.
Okay. Well, I mean, this season, I feel like other seasons more caught me by surprise by their greatness, and this one is sort of living under the shadow of its own hype at a certain point because everyone was clamoring for this, and could Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland deliver? I mean, maybe it deserves a little bit of a lower spot because it also seemed like a little bit of a shorter season. Yep. I wasn't as impressed with how it resolved itself. It felt like it was a little bit cut short. Hmm. But nevertheless, Pickle Rick.
The three I saw included Pickle Rick. That's fucking amazing.
Yes.
How could they take an episode like that that was already so ridiculously silly and have it have that much emotional weight, have it have that much excellence in animation of fighting style and like just that cool factor. It was Jaguar. I don't know if it's going to live up to the hype. And it completely lived up to the hype.
The whole arc with his daughter and the family discovering the depths of who Rick is. At all. Yes. I mean, it was deep and dark and absurd. And
who is that? Susan Sarandon in that episode who played the therapist? Like, just perfect.
God, is that who that is?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you the coprophiliac?
So you would rather turn yourself into a pickle than have a conversation with your daughter?
No, that's not what he's doing. No,
no, that's not it.
God,
but
that show.
But also the Atlantis. I don't remember what it's called.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that episode where they don't even, like, our original Rick and Morty don't even exist in that story. But what's going on is this big epic drama that somehow they managed to condense into 30 minutes.
Morty on Morty violence.
And, like, draw on all sorts of references and, like, pay full tribute to them in the narrative. Like, all of that was incredible to me. And, like, other shows can't seem to pull half of that off. And they do it while making dick jokes.
Well, what I love was how they dropped that first episode on April Fool's Day and just kind of the scope of that first episode and how it paid off the season finale from season two.
Oh, it was amazing.
Like, I was – after watching that episode and, like, the Szechuan sauce craze and everything, I was so jacked for that second episode of season three to come out. It was just brilliant marketing on their part, whether it was intentional or not.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand, like, the fans, though – being a bit of a deterrent, but the show itself is so great.
The show's really good. It's a really good show.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to our number two.
So I was shocked this was number two because this is definitely really high up for me on my list.
Did this make my list?
You're surprised it's number two?
I thought it was going to be number one.
I think this was in my, like, 12 or 13.
I think that's what happened is for some of us it ranked really high and some of us ranked really low, so it didn't rank as high as our number one show, but it was one that we all five watched. And
what are we talking about again?
Do you guys want to know what it is?
I was building anticipation.
Star Trek Discovery, season one, over on CBS All Access.
STD.
Yeah. Our listeners are like, what's CBS All Access?
Oh, man, that's the channel that the disco's on.
let's be honest. Our listeners know what CBS All Access is.
Yeah. Well, I feel like a lot
they know
more
where to
like,
get their STD.
I'm getting my Star Trek from other places.
Well, I talk a ton about this on another podcast.
You do.
So what do you guys think here?
We've checked in on this. I love Star Trek Discovery. I was very skeptical about this. First of all, I'm not the world's biggest Star Trek fan. Like, I like it, but I didn't love it. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes turmoil. Brian Fuller left. CBS? Come on. CBS has Blue Bloods.
Yeah.
That's a runner. I'm keeping that. So I was very skeptical about this, and then I watched the first couple episodes, and I was like, oh, this is really good. And then it just kept getting better and better as it went along. And the serialized nature of it was great. The characters are really good. The special effects, it looks gorgeous. And this is Star Trek as serialized prestige drama, which really works.
I thought it looked great. It was impressive. I was really nervous about it and was impressed that the first episode looked so good and was very engaging. I think the Spore Drive MacGuffin is stupid, and it's a dark weaponized Trek, I remain astonished that friends of mine that walked out of the Abrams Trek movies bitching to high heaven were okay with this show.
Yep, that's me.
But I stuck with it, and I really liked it over the course of the season. Like, by episode four, they had enough characters voice concern with the direction that the captain was taking it.
Right.
Of like, oh, hey, cool, at least some of you realize you're not in a Star Trek show either. and then they where they carried the season through, I liked. I still feel like they set up, went through, and finished the Klingon War in an absurdly short number of episodes that actually dealt with it versus dealing with setting up a piece of machinery in the future that has a button that says Spore Drive in big-ass letters on it. It's a fucking stupid – anyway. So I love that there's a Star Trek show on TV. I love that it looks this good and it's this well acted, and the parts that are brilliant are fucking brilliant. And so it definitely made my top 15 of the year. But
you just don't truck with water bears.
I actually love tardigrades. I was especially impressed that in the future, whenever they show a tardigrade on a computer monitor screen, it says TG in the upper corner. Seriously.
Well, tardigrade.
In the 22nd century, the tardigrades organized and copyrighted their name so that anytime they show up on any form of electronic communication, the little TG has to be there, or else the tardigrade people are owed multiple space dollars.
Well, no, it's a TGTM. With the TG's
there's an XKCD comic about, like, if you really hate your friends, teach them to recognize bad kerning in text and drive them insane. Like, if you really hate your sci-fi nerd friends, teach them to start really looking at the monitor screens and try to make sense of, like, what would that meter mean on the screen? You don't ever want to look at what the levels might mean on any of this shit. It's the most nonsense infographics.
You guys have mentioned most of what's great about the show, but I feel like the one, the truly special thing about this that I can't believe it took them this long to figure out is they didn't make their most interesting character the captain of the ship.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're able to do so much more with that because we don't have to, you know, put our plausible deniability glasses
Jones, right?
on. Who's
Doug Jones? No, Michael.
Yeah, I would say Michael is really kind of leading this cast and has been from the first episode.
And she's not even, she's a first officer when she starts, but most of the show, she doesn't have a rank.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is she the most interesting, though?
Well, she's the lead. She's definitely the
lead. She's the lead. I would say she's the main protagonist, but I don't
necessarily. The captain isn't the most interesting. That's the point I'm trying to make.
And I actually think
my boy from Rent's kind of interesting.
It's not that Lorca's not interesting. It's that in traditional Trek, the captain leaves the ship all the time with his phaser and goes down to the alien, goes down to the planet, leaving the ship. That's not a thing Captain does.
Well, I guess we'll find out why that becomes customary after this show, because it takes place before all the other ones.
They're like, you know, last time we had a captain who didn't leave the ship, he got a little freaky and had a room full of alien skulls, so I feel to get him out and get him some fresh air.
Yeah, he should have more risking of his life.
Let's get him out there.
I think they should have had, at the start of it, Burnham get the captain killed, same as they started it, but not in a way that gets her court-martialed and stripped of rank, just in a way that gets her like, okay, we're going to call it square, but you don't advance to the captain's rank. And instead, Saru, is that just whatever the alien? And then he becomes captain, and then you get a great dynamic of him looking at her going, oh no, you're a brilliant first officer who also got my predecessor killed.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't really want you? And I think that would have been a cool tension that but now you've got Psycho Captain who may have warped them into fuck all wherever.
May have.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
All right, guys. Let's move on to our number one. This was number one by consensus.
Yeah.
I wonder if the listeners at home have picked up yet on the show that we haven't mentioned.
The one we're all dancing around.
Real Rob.
That would obviously be Stranger Things 2.
Yep.
Oh, was that?
The second season, of course. Hence 2.
Yeah.
Over on Netflix. I probably
just
jumped over a bunch
Stranger
of jokes
Things.
You guys wanted to
make. No, I was just going to mention.
We're going to point out for a second.
This show was number 15 on my personal list.
What?
Was it really? Yeah.
No. Yeah.
I loved it, but there's so many shows ahead of it.
Yeah. This show was higher up on my personal list, but that's how I felt about any of the stuff that I had on my list that ran through the 20. Like, as much as I just bitched about Star Trek Discovery, it's within my top 20. There's so much TV this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Stranger Things 2 was great, but almost anything that was a second season or a third to a previous thing almost took a back seat to brand new shit that blew my mind, like Glow.
There's a couple new shows that did not make the top 10 that I was surprised were not higher on y'all's list.
Oh, this was my number two, and the first season blew my mind. It was so amazing. I'm pretty sure it was my number two last year as well, and this one I was like. I thought there was so much hype to, like, how can it live up to what the first season promised? And you guys might disagree, but I found I was so enraptured by – enraptured, is that the right word?
Sure.
I'm going to go with it. By how this season was able to take what the first one laid out, and now it was just building off of that world, building off those established characters. I'm like – I don't know how many times you could kind of keep doing this, but the narrative made sense for this world. It took the most powerful person, Eleven, and sidelined her in what I thought was a great way that actually just did a bunch of character building between her and the other most interesting character, Hopper. And I love the pairing there.
It's the most powerful supernatural character with the most powerful real-world character that we have on the team.
Right? And just – I was – blown away. They still managed to do all these riffs on all these 80s iconic shows and movies and scores, and yet still keep it within their world. And I mean, it's just one of those I watched all the way through and was just amazed.
I love how my two favorite characters on the show were, and this is the writer's own omission, were just totally meant to be throwaway characters in the first season, and that's Dustin and Steve.
Yeah, Dustin and Steve,
and
that was a great pairing.
They're great, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you come into the second season, definitely putting them together and giving them more to do, like turning Steve into the babysitter for the kids.
Yep.
That scene in the very last episode where they all have the bandanas and the swimming goggles,
yep,
that's Halloween next year.
Also, they
in spades.
Also, they did the Alien to Aliens thing, which is any sequel needs to do, which is there was one demogorgon in the first year. This year, there's a whole army of them.
Yeah.
And that they did that well, and they were still scary.
Yeah.
And then they introduced some new characters, like Sean Astin's character, Bob.
And Max.
What a great character. Yeah. And Max, Mad Max, she's great.
Mm-hmm. Bob was everything Barb needed to be.
Yeah.
This one almost slipped down further on the rank for me because Stranger Things manages to so effortlessly do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like it manages to lay out its references like it's no big deal to do this show with this many homage moments and, and riffs and stuff on things and not look like a hack job.
Yeah.
And tell an original story I give a shit about. Like, I care about Stranger Things. Stranger Things also happens to be this insane homage to a bunch of other stuff.
Right.
And then this season, someone online pointed it out, and once I read it, I can't unsee it. This season, like, broke that into multiple 80s show references so that instead of, like, just being a Stephen King story or whatever, it's Adventures in Babysitting, it's Goonies, it's like all the little groups as they kind of break off to go fight the monsters kind of break off into their own 80s movie homage.
Well, it's a bunch of 80s horror movies
It's,
and the meta references.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul Reiser playing a version of his – playing a type of character who's like the scientist you think is going to be sinister. They're riffing on Burke from Aliens.
Yes.
And then they're able to do a twist because you're expecting Burke from Aliens.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Like, they managed to set up the references and then get to actually use them. I feel like one of the shows you're going to talk about in your extra did a similar thing. Grant pointed that out with Future Man did a similar thing.
Yeah.
You're thinking that Sean Astin's going to be from Toy Soldiers, right?
Right.
But it's totally not. It's more like a Goonies thing.
Nobody's thinking that.
No one thought Toy Soldiers.
In season three, one of two classic actors to come in and play characters. Do you pick Keith or Sutherland?
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Or Corey Feldman?
Oh, man, that'd either one would be great.
Ooh,
would be
great. Corey Feldman, all the way. Who would he play, though? Like Deadbeat Dad?
Steve's dad.
There you go.
Holy shit.
Oh, man, that would work. Yeah, the only thing I didn't care about this season were I didn't like Dustin and Dart.
I didn't like
Dustin hiding his shit from his friends.
It was dumb, and it got people killed.
Well, yeah, it lasted a hair longer than I could allow that character. I just didn't believe he would be that person that would hide that.
He was hormonal, and it was all about Max.
They were going for E.T. and Iron Giant, and they didn't get anywhere close to either of those.
Well, the Iron
Planet
Giant,
Navigator.
E.T. and Iron Giant didn't murder a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't know. Once it got to that point, he immediately got.
I feel like he went past it knowing. Like, I feel
E.T.
like
E.T. got Elliot sick.
Yeah. I feel like he went past it knowing a minute. Like, that was the only. It didn't go far enough to mess something up for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I hit a point where I went, "Fuck you for that."
Yeah.
But.
You're like, that just,
but that was
dumb.
The closest thing to like, resolve this quick, guys.
Mm-hmm. That's funny because most complaints I heard were about the one-off episode. The New York episode. Like, a lot of people didn't like the ending on a cliffhanger in like episode 6 and then all of a sudden episode 7 with the secret sister or whatever it was called.
Which I loved, but I also think like in a non-binge, that might not have worked.
I watched them all literally in a day. Yeah. And so watching Eleven go find the Morlocks was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I watched yeah, I watched this as one giant movie.
Find the Morlocks in like some RoboCop like city dystopia thing. Yeah. I'm like, okay, sweet.
Well, 80s New York, that was kind of what it was like.
You know, speaking of horror references, and you talk about watching it as one movie, how it like totally turns into The Exorcist at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I was not expecting that at all. And then when it pops up, like, well, this is really kind of freaking me out.
And the Phoenix Saga. I mean, you've got Eleven basically coming to her full power. Like, they riff on everything here. It's great.
And that ending. I loved the ending.
Yeah. The rollover and
you mean the Pretty in Pink ending?
Yeah,
where they tagged in yet another 80s thing.
The dance scene, and it was just all so cute. And I was like, why am I so invested in all their characters?
Yep. And you know what I kept thinking at the end? Was, I got a hand job in an igloo.
That is an atypical reference. Kyle did not just have a stroke.
Well,
or many strokes in the case of an igloo handjob.
All right, stay tuned because we're going to come back with our honorable mentions and find out if that's on Kyle's list. So you thought we forgot about your show.
We did.
We did.
We did.
There's 75 shows this year.
I just refused to talk about some of them.
But we didn't forget about a bunch of shows, and all of us have a little side list. Three choices each that are honorable mentions, stuff that didn't make our conjoined twin of a top 10 list.
Side piece TV.
Side piece TV right here.
That's Kyle's side project for next year.
Okay, let's start off with Ashley, who our fifth TV dude. She was unable to make it because she's just wrapping up her latest semester and she's got some big tests.
She's got tests and stuff, man.
But she'll be, I think, on next week's episode.
I think that's right.
Anyway, or last week's episode, depending on how this comes out.
Time travel.
Let's not think about it. All right. So Ashley's choices were, first up, Lady Dynamite.
This is Maria Bamford's show on Netflix, which is crazy and weird. And I've only seen half of the first season, and you either love it or you don't.
She's literally crazy. Like, she's an actually crazy person, right?
Actually crazy person. And I think it is a voice unlike anything else. And it's one of those shows that if there was less stuff, I would definitely watch it. But as is, it just didn't quite make my list. But Ashley really loves it.
Yeah, I found it, like, very schizophrenic.
Maria Bamford does.
Maybe intentionally so.
She does an amazing impersonation of a normal person.
Yeah.
If that tells you anything about her style of comedy.
So, yeah.
For my complaints about ranking lists and the difficulties I have with top 10 lists, the doing this has put together a list of shows that made the list. I knew, like, oh, man, I meant to watch that. I meant to get back to, oh, I heard that was great.
Yeah.
And so I'm loving this because, like you said, there's so much television that Lady Dynamite I watched an episode of, and then four other things dropped, and I didn't get back to it.
Yeah, it's nothing wrong with it. Just didn't quite make my personal list, but it made Ashley's.
Ashley's number two. I know this one has been floating around all of our, like, top 20 lists. Glow.
Man, Glow was just outside the list. Everybody liked it.
So good.
It just didn't quite land. It's higher up on my list. I thought this was a fantastic show.
I went back and watched the pilot, and I realized, like, the pilot's a little bit awkward. Like, some of the beats don't really hit. It feels like all of the stuff is there, but it's not quite meshing yet.
Well, we hadn't met the whole cast yet.
Yeah, and it gets better and better as that show went on up until the end.
I binged it straight through, and it's one of the, like, two shows this year that I inadvertently watched twice straight through.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah,
I really liked it, too.
And then Insecure over on HBO had its second season.
Yeah.
I was slow getting into watching this, and I finally went through and just, like, sat down and watched the rest of it. It's so much better.
This one was bingeable. This one was bingeable this year. I like season one a lot, and I thought maybe season two had lost a step. But no, it's just the pacing was – this was a bingeable year, and it binges really well.
Episode three, I jumped onto something else. So you're saying I should go back and finish this one up?
For sure. Yeah. Go watch the last few episodes all in a row.
It gets a lot better.
All right.
All right, well, let's jump over to Les, and Les, you can actually talk a little bit more in depth about your picks, starting with your number one, which is The Good Fight.
Yeah, so the real reason that CBS All Access exists is not Star Trek Discovery.
Right, nobody cares about Star Trek.
I'm glad they're there. That's great.
Yeah, sure, it's nice.
But the apparent reason that they launched this, or the thing that was on it immediately when CBS All Access first launched, was The Good Fight, which I almost always have a back pocket legal drama soap opera thing that I watch that I'm not having to follow or take seriously or anything. And The Good Wife was it for the longest time. It had Alan Cummings. It had a bunch of actors I loved. Josh Charles was on it for the longest time. Mm-hmm. They've now that show actually ended, straight up finished it. They have a falling out between characters and the main character leaves. They continue it on, picking up immediately, right after the show ended, on their All Access thing, and they call it, instead of The Good Wife, it's The Good Fight. But the other thing they did is that it starts out with characters watching Trump get sworn in, or win the election, rather. And then the main character, who's one of the three partner lawyers from Good Wife, joins a new all-black firm. And for the rest of the season of 10 or 12 episodes, they're doing a damages subplot of a Bernie Madoff type thing. So the whole thing kind of has this very damages feeling subplot. but they're also every episode just hammering with Delroy Lindo leading this black law firm against Trump-type cases and online trolls. And like, so their topical case ripped from the headlines is almost always pointedly what I needed this year.
God damn it, Les. I think you just sold me on the good fight.
Yeah,
Delroy Lindo.
So I watch him like very cheesily, but you know, and in a very like, we're a law firm doing good in the world. But I love the cast, and I love the show is so unabashedly, we know we are not on cable, and so we're going to say whatever we want. And it is the most unabashedly liberal thing I've seen on TV in a long time.
I think you just sold me on that show.
Les is number two, The Travelers, over on Netflix.
I think it's just Travelers, but it's got a season two, I believe, on
yep.
its way.
It's coming at the end of the year, yeah.
Yes. Netflix dropped this one, and I didn't know anything about it. It has Will from Will and Grace, who I normally hate in things. He usually like just ruins show. He never looks believable. He always looks like an actor in a show.
Right.
Anyway, Travelers is so well handled time travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm such a sucker for time travel, and it really is. It's so beautifully done. I love the setup. You have a team of people who are trying to fix the future, but time travel is a one-way ticket back, and you take over someone's body.
Yeah.
So they have a character misfire, and they don't land in the body they're supposed to. They don't have their information right. Once you're back here, the mission is you just have to do what you're supposed to do because you can't know if it worked. They have time travel just come unwound. Where we're like, you try to do this mission and you see immediately how messy and impossible it would be to pull this off.
If the Sci-Fi Network were good, this would be one of its best shows.
This is what Continuum would have been.
Yeah.
Oh, and number three goes to, this was a miniseries, I believe, but Manhunt Unabomber over on Netflix.
Yeah, so this was actually a Discovery Channel mm-hmm. show, which I'm sure is part, I mean, I never even heard of it. Yeah. When it was actually airing, but I'm sure I would have disregarded it because that I just really wasn't looking forward to. And in a year of procedurals and true crime kind of stuff and the OJ series and all that, I just really didn't expect anything from this. They have Paul Bettany playing Timothy or Ted Kaczynski rather. Sam Worthington, who is usually just boring mm-hmm. And kind of a cipher. He's great as the guy hunting down Kaczynski, and you watch them develop a linguistic plan. Like they break a code basically linguistically in his letters, and it's really cool to watch. Also, if you have not touched on the Unabomber stuff since that was in the paper in the 90s, his manifesto sounded bugshit crazy then. And it's scarily less crazy now. His end move with mailing bombs to people is still very, very crazy. But the like, hey, we're approaching a technological point where we're actually disconnected from each other because of this, and nobody understands how anything works, and if this shit breaks, then we're all fucked. That's all a lot scarier now and less insane. So like throughout the whole show, I kept going, oh, wow, that makes more sense now. You should still catch him because he's mailing bombs to people.
but just a wag of the finger.
But on the other hand, like that part's not crazy. This part's not. Yeah, I was amazed. It's an out of the blue miniseries that I went, whoa, what's that?
Makes me think of the John Oliver episode where he's talking about the post office TV show. Did you guys see that one? Where it's like the
postal literal, inspectors.
The postal inspectors, yeah. They should have done postal inspectors hunt down the Unabomber.
Right? all right, well, let's jump over to Kyle. Kyle, your number one pick was Billions.
Billions, baby!
Over on, is that Showtime?
Showtime.
This is season two.
This is season two, and if you're not familiar with the show, this is Robin Hood versus the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Wait, which one's which?
Yeah. So Robin Hood, if Robin Hood was a like millionaire or billionaire venture capitalist and the Sheriff of Nottingham was a district attorney, you've got this character, Bobby Axelrod, who's just got more money than he could ever spend in a million lifetimes, who may be on the sly, you know, like questioning the boundaries of what's ethical. I heard this great Trump quote, which was, just because it's not illegal doesn't mean you should do it. You know, like there's some things that he does that you're like, that's probably pretty illegal. And then other things where it's blatantly illegal. But then you have this Chuck Rhodes character who is, for all extensive purposes, the good guy. He's here to take Bobby Axelrod down, you know, this millionaire venture capitalist, you know, doing all this stuff. But in the show, a lot of times, he's kind of the dick.
He's a narcissistic mess.
Yeah, he's like, you're kind of rooting for Bobby Axelrod to win. He feels like Robin Hood. Like, yeah, the way he's getting all this money isn't really ethical, but the people he gives it to, like this season, or coming up in season three, we just found out this character, Taylor, who is like a non-gendered, what's the?
Non-gender binary.
Yeah, non-gender binary character. You see him take this kid who he, like, you know, sees the potential in him under his wing to like turn him into, you know, kind of a crazy trader, venture capitalist guy too. But then towards the end of the season, you see this kid, you know, he's been so taken away with the mystery of Bobby that, you know, he starts to do things that kind of blur, you know, where his ethics lie.
They.
Yeah.
Anyway, which is it's interesting is Asia Kate Dillon, who plays that character. That was my favorite part of Billions, because we've never seen that kind of character on TV, and we've never seen it treated that way, and it was fascinating. And I mean, honestly, the cast is so good in this show.
Yeah, you could talk about each one of these guys agnosium if you wanted to. I think I used that right. But we got more shows to talk about.
Number two on your list is the first season of The Crown over on Netflix.
Actually,
you're free picking the second season. You haven't even finished watching yet.
Well, okay. Let me throw this out there, all right?
Is this for the second season?
This is for the second season, and I've watched the second season already.
Oh, okay, well.
So by the time you listen to this show,
came out 2 days
we
ago.
Will already have done an episode on The Crown. But we've actually recorded this before that. So it came out 2 days ago from when we're recording. And yeah, me and my fiance have binged it already. The thing is, I put this on my list beforehand because I was so taken away by the first season, and I knew they were coming back with something strong this season. I'd have changed it before the show if I didn't like it.
Oh, do you want to do a change?
No. I do want to keep this.
Oh.
In fact, I did have another show on there, Broadchurch Season 3, which I ended up cutting because, yeah, I didn't feel like this third season lived up to the first and second. But The Crown Season 2 definitely lives up to the first season, and I feel like even exceeds it in a lot of places. Something everybody loved about the first season of The Crown was you get this hard-hitting drama, but with a historical relevance. You learn something as you're watching it. And this season, they go into even more historical detail. And yeah, I mean, you learn about lots of stuff. Gosh, my brain is just...
No. What I read about it was, hey, remember that character people didn't care as much for, Philip? You get a lot more of him this season. That's the only thing I heard about him.
No. And that's... Gosh, I just... Before I came here, I finished the last two episodes. And in the second to the last episode, they do this amazing story about Prince Charles going to his boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
Notoriously, Prince Charles had this really awful time in school. Was just, you know, he's the future king. So people are, you know... giving him a, you know, kind of treating him differently and not in the positive. But the way that they show this and tell the story is it's back to back. You see Philip when he's a young kid going to the school and his experience at this boarding school. And then you see his son's experience, which is totally different. And you definitely leave the episode and Philip is the villain. Like you see him like do some really nasty stuff to his kid and that one. But you also... like not only feel bad for him for going through the same stuff, his father doing the same thing, but you understand why he would treat his kid that way.
Wow.
And what's interesting is if you know the history, the Prince William and Prince Harry, they ended up going to Eads, which was the original school Charles wanted to go to.
Hmm.
So it's funny how the place that Philip would send his kid was directly in response to where his father sent him. And the same with Charles. He sent his kids to school because of where his father sent him.
I think you might be kind of an English...
Anglophile.
Yeah.
I'm getting that vibe.
Now, there's a couple of those on there. And that's another thing about doing the top 10 lists is you put together your list and then you're like, oh, wait, I haven't even looked at the foreign TV
I was going to say, because your third is another Anglophile pick.
Oh, yeah. This is big time.
I wanted to say, I think you're crashing.
Oh, yeah.
So I was going to say, how about we record a quick wrap-up, and then you can bounce, and then we can finish up with the rest of our stuff.
Okay.
And that's it for our best of and our honorable mentions, guys. So, like, overall, what did you guys think of this year?
This is a great year for TV.
Yeah, I'm excited about next year.
The OA happened.
Okay, and also that. Oh, and again, to all you Blueys out there, we're sorry we didn't put Blue Buds.
Is that what we're calling them?
Blueys. That's, I just made it up. That's it.
I love
Blueys.
That.
The Blue Ballers.
That's good. And I want Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to think about what it did.
That'll be the first time the people involved with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. yes. thought about anything.
Oh, God. I feel like some people like keep saying, it got better, guys. It
nope,
got better.
They sent the whole cast to space because that's how bad that shit got.
That's right. You go to space and
you
think about what you've done.
You go to space and you think about what you did. No, I loved 2017 for television. This was an amazing year.
Yeah, it's a great year.
Yeah, overall, fantastic. And I watched way too much TV.
Me too, and I'm going to do the same thing next year.
I'm really going to try to up the ante and keep track. It's going to be embarrassing, and I think I'm going to set a goal and really hit it.
Yes. All right, guys. Well, we will be back next week. But until then, thank you, Les. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Randy.
And thank you, Ashley.
And thank yes. you, Ashley. Yeah. And thank you, listeners.
And thank you, Grant.
Oh, thanks. All right, we'll be back. Well, we'll probably be back next week, but we'll also be back in 2018.
In the far future.
Future.
TV Dudes out.
And your number three, Kyle, is The Grand Tour?
A show we've never talked about on this podcast.
Have we never talked about this? I don't even know what this is on. Esquire or something? What channel is this on?
On GQ TV.
This is the guys from Top Gear, who used to be on the BBC. They are now on Amazon Prime.
Oh, it's Amazon Prime.
Yeah, Amazon Prime, which just got picked up on my Apple TV.
I was going to say, it's on Apple TV now.
So I'm finally in. Yeah, because this is one where I love this show. I've loved it since the Top Gear days. And for me, it's been one of those pain in the ass. Like, I usually watch it on my computer or like my cell phone just because it's easier to do Amazon on those. Now I've got my Amazon Prime on my Apple TV just in time for season two. But we're actually talking about season one right now because last year they started the season in 2016 and then it ended in 2017.
Okay.
With a majority of it in 2017. So I feel like it counts for a 2017 show. But for those of you guys not familiar with this, this started forever ago. I mean, I want to say this show's been running since the 80s as a consumer reports show for automotive industry. These guys, they drive cars around and they give reviews. Oh, you should drive this car, da da. But where the show gets really fun is where they get the really over-the-top cars, the like million-dollar cars that go, you know, 200 miles an hour, hypercars, this or that. And then not only are they driving around these super expensive cars, but these middle-aged men act like children and just get into shenanigans.
Was this the first season that's been over here like rebranded?
Yep. First season since BBC. And, you know, my biggest grievance with it is they didn't get to bring over any of their segments from the BBC show. So, like, a really popular part of Top Gear was the Stig character, which is, like, their stunt driver.
Yeah.
They tried to replace their stunt driver this year with a character called the American. And I've already heard that he's not coming back for season two. Just kind of a shoot and a miss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it was a funny concept. He just made fun of British people and British cars the whole time. And he was kind of a redneck NASCAR guy. The other one is like their news segments and their celebrity segments. So apparently they can't do celebrity interviews on this show, which I doesn't seem
because
like
they did that in the other one too.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a copyrightable thing. So what they do is they have celebrity guests who come to the show, and every episode they kill somebody. So like the show takes place. It used to take place in the UK, but now it's a grand tour. So they set this tent up all over the world in a different location each week, and they'll have somebody from that location come to visit. So I think they were in Australia, and Charlize Theron came on. And as she's walking up to the tent, like she's attacked by a snake or something, and she dies of poisoning right there. So then it's on to the next segment. And there was a really fun one where they were on a waterfront, and somebody was cruising up on a speedboat, and the boat sank, and you actually saw like blood in the water. Like, I don't know how they did it, probably all in post. But no, it's these guys having fun with cars. And that's not something I ever thought that I'd be interested enough to, like, you know, go to watch it every week. But the show really isn't about the cars for me. It's about these characters and just kind of the fun they have. And they're really smart with variety programming over there. The writing, it seems effortless, and I feel like that's because they do work really hard on making sure that everything flows together, and it's really entertaining.
Right on. Now,
yeah.
I was looking at my list and Randy's list, and I'm excited about Randy's list, which means I want to go first.
Go. Go for it.
All right. So my number one, and this was my favorite show of the year.
Of all time.
And my favorite show for the past 3 years running, The Leftovers. And I feel like everyone else kind of left me high and dry here because no one else put it, I think, even in their top 10.
It's not even in my top 20.
Yeah. Damon Lindelof. This is, oh yeah, you didn't like it.
No, I did like it. It just, I had my issues with that throughout it. It's on my top like 50.
I thought, as far as like this show, what it set out to do, how it established a pretty heavy tone in that first season, but then it made it really a lot more lighthearted and fun, even for the heavy topics it was going through in the second season. And how it was able to take and resolve everything in this third season, like, it was beautiful. It was profound. It was some things that I'm a little bit uncomfortable, like, having to, like, consider too much. Like, the like death, the concept of afterlife, the concept of how we grieve for those we lose and how we can try to move on and rebuild. I thought, it's just Damon Lindelof is my boy, and mm-hmm. I love everything he does, and that's the honest truth. I just love him.
Yeah, well, this made The Handmaid's Tale look like a light comedy. It's so goddamn bleak.
I didn't think it wasn't that bleak. They had a lion sex party in this one.
And it did have the – it was number one on my list of shows which had a lion cult sex party on a boat.
That was my favorite episode. That was pretty cute.
Yeah.
They have a little bit of time travel going on and some other weird shenanigans.
They had the first time I've ever seen anyone use a penis to get through a scanner. there's some weird shit this year. I did really like it. It's just – it didn't quite hit my fancy the way it did.
Oh, man. Yeah, nothing else achieved what I think this one does, and it's a complete story, and I thought how it resolved with that final episode was bliss. So that was my number one. Mm-hmm. My number two goes to BoJack Horseman.
Another melancholy show.
I know. I don't necessarily like dour shows.
You're our Morrissey. You're our dark and broody.
Morrissey.
Except you're not an asshole, but you're like the dark. You're like the dark broody one.
Oh, man, that's really not me. I don't like those shows generally. But BoJack Horseman does that perfect balance of, like, the dark, heavy pathos, but also the hilarious, pun-filled, just crazy, surreal, like, shenanigans. Man, all the puns and all the animals. The mileage they get out of that, the character that they have, what's his name? The roommate. Now I'm
Aaron Paul's dude.
Aaron Paul's
Todd. Todd.
Todd. I love his whole arc. But really, this one went and delved into BoJack Horseman's past and his demons and how this is hereditary in a way. And it's like you get to see how he's dealing with his relationship with his potential daughter and how his parents, his mom in particular, dealt with him and just the tragedy that seems to be passed on generation to generation. And I thought how it was executed was pretty profound.
This show's amazing. I thought it was a great season.
And it's an animated comical cartoon, comical quote unquote.
Yeah.
But it tackles heavier things than most any show can do.
Yeah.
So it's depressing, but it's a cartoon.
And it's got some funny. I mean, it's got some of the Hollywood Inside Baseball stuff they do is really funny.
Yeah.
What?
They do, though. All right, my number three, I toggled between Ozark and this one, but I had to settle on American Vandal over on Netflix first season because this show, it was so surprising.
Who drew the decks, Grant? Who drew the decks?
Oh, we all know now.
Yeah, we all know.
But the fact that it took the documentary style and it updated it not just for like a modern youth audience, but it was managed to make it a really funny And yet, you know, you're kind of rooting for this dumbass dude who like drew the ticks, and you're kind of trying to solve the mystery the whole time. It's just really well done. And I thought, like, for a new style that Netflix just kind of rolled out, again, on the slide, Netflix does this.
Just all of a sudden.
Here's a new show. And
here's 13 episodes. Watch it this weekend before the next show hits.
It was amazing. Yeah.
By the way, Grant, I also really liked American Vandal. But I feel like Ozark is more on brand for you being the dark one.
Oh, I really should have gone with 13 Reasons Why.
Oh, Jesus.
If I wanted to just stick with the theme, like bleak shows. I love that one, too.
That was on my top 25. Yeah, it's in my list. It's in my list.
All right, Randy. You're number one.
My number one is The Deuce over on HBO.
Ooh.
I love what David Simon does. And with George Pelicanos especially, like The Wire, Tremé. I feel like I'm taking Greg's place here, which is weird because he was the guy who loved The Wire and all that stuff. But, man, 70s crime and porn in New York, like, this is right up my alley. I love sort of gritty crime stuff.
Was this in your top 10?
Yes, absolutely. This is in my top 10.
Yeah, this is in my top 10, too.
This is a fantastic show. Beautifully acted, beautifully executed.
Only 8 episodes, and, man, it just gets better and better. The world building.
Super well researched.
It's slow.
Yeah.
And that is, like, one of the hangups I have with, like, David Simon. He takes a long time to, like, ease you into this. But once you kind of, like, get accustomed to all the characters, you are hooked. You're so invested in their lives.
I will always take that ride. And I was not disappointed. I think The Deuce is better than Tremé, which I really, really loved.
I love the porn director, the guy who was in Harold and Kumar and the American Pie movies.
David Krumholtz.
I'm like, I love it. It's just, he's still in stuff.
Yep.
And he's not bad. He's good. Keep casting him.
He keeps getting jollier and jollier.
Yeah. Yeah. This was a fantastic season of TV.
Number two.
About as far away from The Deuce as you can get. Future Man on Hulu.
You'd be surprised. There's some commonality.
Change Zone.
Future Man is like this perfect 80s riff. It's riffing on Last Starfighter, on Back to the Future, on celebrity chef culture, on video games, like, and on 80s beach movies. Like, it hits everything.
Oh, that Top Gun scene.
And it's so funny. It's so outrageous. And you never know where they're going to zig when they're going to zag. Their big badass from the future, Wolf, becomes a celebrity chef. And it discovers he's good at it. And their Nebushi hero, you know, the Nebushi video game guy, becomes like an action hero by the end. Eliza Coop's sort of weird wolf. No, not wolf. What's her? Tiger.
Tiger,
her sort
of
monotone... warrior woman from the future develops into like this mom. It, like, they go different places. They really use the time travel tropes. They jump into all these different eras. It's hilariously funny. It's very inventive, and it wraps up really strong. Like, this was such a surprise.
Also, they brought that kid from the Hunger Games, which, just from a branding standpoint, that is so smart because they're going to get so many people to watch this.
Josh Hutcherson,
normally wouldn't be into it.
Yeah,
I also love how they the character Tiger from the video game, you totally think in the first one, like, oh, this is his love interest, and then they're going to get together. And then they're charging up.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just boning Wolfhart. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, did a great job of drawing the line of, no, that's not the relationship.
you don't want to date this girl.
All right, Randy, and your number three.
My number three is Fargo. Fargo.
Hell yeah.
Fargo is my number one on my personal list.
And it
Same
didn't
here.
Make our top 10.
Because nobody else gave it as much love as
Dude,
I did.
Hey, it was number one on my list, too.
I know, but nobody else was on nobody else's list.
It was a leftover for the both of us.
Yeah,
cold-blooded,
but
you may say.
I loved Fargo season three. Ewan McGregor playing brothers. And they're David Thewlis playing that creepy Russian
the wolf,
British
basically, right?
Yeah, that guy was terrifying.
Sticking his balls in a coffee mug, drink.
it was a fantastic episode a series. Oh, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
That was the big standout.
I mean, this was another great season of Fargo, very different from what's gone the previous two seasons, but of a piece with it. This is pure rural noir, and it is so right up my alley, which is why it outranks Legion for me. I love superheroes. I love the X-Men. But between those two, if I have to choose, I'm going Fargo every time.
Either way, you love Noah Hawley.
I love Noah Hawley.
Yeah, I can make some TV.
I do love Noah Hawley. And that's why I have a restraining order.
Loving a little bit too much. Tone it down.
If you guys aren't watching Fargo right now, I cannot recommend this highly enough.
Fargo's amazing.
Especially if you've never seen it, go back to that first season and just start, oh, it's going to be a good time.
Well, I mean, it's a classic movie, and I think we're all scared that they were adapting to TV. That, like, what are you doing? And instead, there's been three seasons of great TV that are as good as the movie.
I'm like, how do you find these stories to adapt? Like,
because they're making them all up.
Oh, you think so?
No, they absolutely are. The true story is a joke. They're none of them are true stories.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. All right, guys. Well,
best of the year.
Best of the year. That's our thoughts on these shows. Please let us know what you guys think in the comments. And listeners, thank you. We're going to wrap things up right here. We'll be back next week. And until then,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.
Okay, here's my top 51. Fargo, Legion, Game of Thrones, Better Call Saul, Star Trek Discovery, Master of None, Glow, The Good Place, The Handmaid's Tale, The Deuce, Future Man, You're the Worst, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, iZombie, Stranger Things, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Dear White People, Better Things, Veep, Silicon Valley, Rick and Morty, BoJack Horseman, The Mick, Trial and Error, Atypical, Sense8, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Crashing, Insecure, Review, Love, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Broad City, Mindhunter, Godless, American Gods, The Leftovers, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, Sneaky Pete, Easy, Orange is the New Black, A Series of Unfortunate Events, American Vandal, 13 Reasons Why, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Sarah the Clarita Diet, Casual, Ozark, Travelers, Smilf, and Timeless.